and we see it over and over again. And let's just keep going back to that famous saying, when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is continuing to tell us, and with more rapidity, that he is an autocrat. And if he takes power again, he will be an autocrat. And this worshiping of Hitler's power, just like this worshiping of President Xi, just like this worshiping of Kim Jong-un, just like this worshiping of Vladimir Putin, it all comes from the same disturbing place. He has an anti-American bent to authoritarianism.
Absolutely. I mean, Donald Trump has told us like 57,000 times who he is, and we see clearly who he is. And what a sick, warped individual he happens to be. I mean, it's hard to look at him any other way. Yes, you always follow the money with Trump, but it's more than his lust for money. It's more than his narcissism. There is this authoritarian bet, this fawning over authoritarian figures. I know we're going to talk about it later, but Viktor Orban at Mar-a-Lago, are you kidding me? This is the great guy, the great leader that he wants to praise. It's just sick, and it amazes me, and I'm sure it amazes General Kelly, and it amazes a lot of other people that more Americans, that all Americans, don't see this in Donald Trump and don't fear it and reject it. But again, here we are. He's going to be the Republican candidate, and there's a possibility that he could be president again. It scares the willies out of General Kelly, and scare the willies out of all of us.
Yeah, scares the willies out of many people. He has a 1 in 2 chance of being president of the United States. We should not overlook that.
In, day out, when people say, I don't feel great about the economy, ka-ching, this is why.
So which sectors are behind this? Is it still food? Is it gas? What are the other areas?
It's food. It's housing. It's energy. It's, go out and get insurance right now. All the things you're needing in your day-to-day life. And when it's a big nut like housing costing you so much, you're not that psyched.
Yeah. So, Steph, I think there's, like you said, there's been this perception. We hear it again from Donald Trump, like the economy's in shambles. It's a disaster. Only he can come in to save it. We know that's wrong. We've seen all the data. Just if you can, paint a general picture. So inflation is still higher than any of us wants it to be. Full stop. But broadly, the economy is doing how?
The economy is doing well. Look at unemployment. You can get right. There's 24 states right now about to raise minimum wage. When your son and daughter go to get a summer job this summer, it is going to pay well. But when small businesses talk about what life is like for them, they're going to say inflation is a problem. And you're starting to see consumers go, how much did dinner cost? I might not want to ask Willie out to dinner next week. Too much.
Well, I always make him pay. But Willie, it's certainly true, though. The White House has been banking on. They've been reading the consumer sentiment numbers, polling showing Americans starting to feel better on the economy.
Yeah, they are.
They haven't really started to give the president credit for that yet, but they feel like that'll happen next. But obviously, a number like this, it's a worry.
Yeah. He's doing everything he can. You hear announcement after announcement every week, but he cannot control things like food prices and go to the store and get your ground beef. It's expensive.
And this is not a unfamiliar refrain for Donald Trump, who praises these strongmen, who praises these leaders. We can go down the list. It's Kim Jong-un. It's Viktor Orban. It's Xi Jinping. It's Bolsonaro out of Brazil. And of course, it is Vladimir Putin time and time again. So this reported admiration for Adolf Hitler certainly is of that trend for Donald Trump, even if it's not something he says publicly. And I think it is instructive to ask as a preview as to what the next Trump term would look like were he to be reelected. Not just that he would side with all of these leaders, including with Putin in the conflict against Ukraine, but with Trump in office again, facing no consequences, having gotten away with all of these criminal indictments, having gotten away with fueling the January 6th insurrection, with not having to face voters again, he would be unchecked. He would be unfettered. There would be no John Kelly in the White House next time. It would only be true believers. There would not be guardrails. And I think we would see him lean in to these strongman tendencies, Joe Amica.
Yeah, and we can call it sick and disgusting, but the reality is this is unbelievably dangerous for our country. And somebody like this, someone like Donald Trump, who does what Donald Trump does, says what Donald Trump says, has done what he's done as president of the United States, would be, in normal times, shunned. Would be shunned completely, politically or personally. But in this case, you have people showing up at Mar-a-Lago and clapping and hooting and going to his rallies. And you can't just cast them off as uninformed or there for the show. If you read like Madeleine Albright's book on fascism or any books on the rise of dictatorships, this is how it happens.
Well, this is the primal scream of a dying regime. Pray for our enemies, because we're going medieval on these people. Putin's not got a free shot. All these networks lying about the people. The people have had a belly full of it. I know you don't like hearing that. I know you try to do everything in the world to stop that, but you're not going to stop it. It's going to happen.
And where do people like that go to share the big lie? MAGA Media. I wish, in my soul, I wish that any of these people had a conscience.
Ask yourself, what is my task and what is my purpose? If that answer is to save my country, this country will be saved.
War Room. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bann.
It's Tuesday, 12 March, year of our Lord, 2024. You just heard, since the anti-democracy pitch is not working for them, and since the glow of what, I don't know, Adderall, whatever he got jacked up on Thursday night for his for not a State of the Union, for this screed in the Congress, in the House, since that's wearing off and reality setting in about what he's really wrought on this country, and the numbers couldn't be more horrific for him. Now their new tact is, and this is because of a book that quotes old news of General Kelly. And remember, General Kelly, when he was chosen as chief of staff, it didn't work out. He wasn't a great chief of staff. And, you know, he has struck out at President Trump on numerous occasions, say he's an authoritarian. I just keep going back and saying, look at the guy's actions. Those are years of peace and prosperity. Would anyone not hearken back to that time? And he kept Putin and the KGB in their place. There was no attacks anywhere. They kept North Korea in its place, kept Xi in its place, kept the mullahs in Persia in their place. No war in Gaza, no Houthi rebels sinking ships, sinking major transports in the Red Sea and attacking American combatants in a Kerry battle group. None of it. No crossing of the, no invasion of the southern border. None of it. No $1 trillion, you know, every 100 days deficits. None of it. None of the chaos and anarchy that's driving the world, the crime in the streets, the migrant crime, the illegal alien crime, visit upon people. None of that happened. So you have an actual record that you can look at, that you can focus on. But this is their new thing, is he's Hitler. I just want to say, this is from the creme de la creme of the MSNBC crowd. He's sick, warped individual, lust for money, a narcissist. He's sick and disgusting. He's dangerous. On and on and on. This is their new mantra. This is their new line of attack that he's, and they're talking about a guy, I think he's won 5 elections, Viktor Orban, having chased the demons of Soros land out of Hungary, which is, you know, here in the United States. Look what Soros has done to this country. Look at the prosecutors, the local DAs he's put in office. Look at the pushing of the Open Borders group with the Open Society. Look at the NGOs he's funded. George Soros is a demon, a devil, okay? He's a demon. And Viktor Orban, they ran him out of Hungary. Like, we're going to run him out of the United States. That day is coming, folks. You know, this is a bad guy, and his son's a bad guy, and the people around him are bad guys, the people at these NGOs he has. And so Orban's won what? They love democracy, except when people like Trump and Orban win. Orban wins in a democracy, wins all the time, overwhelming by landslides. With all of Western Europe, all the Western Europe media against him, Times of London, Financial Times, The Guardian, all of it. And I had the honor of sitting down for about an hour with Orban when he was here in D.C. last week before he went to Mar-a-Lago. he is an absolutely brilliant guy, brilliant, and has set things right in Hungary, and his people love him for it. And remember, there's no illegal alien invasion in Hungary. They're not dealing with what France is dealing with. They're not dealing with what England's dealing with. They're not dealing with what Italy's dealing with, because he took a hard line, like we're going to take a hard line here when we seal the border and when President Trump starts the mass deportations in 2025. But this is their line of attack. Their line of attack is now because, you know, they're not getting traction on these other things. They keep wanting, Biden's not getting love for the economy. Well, look at the lived experience of the American people. Look at the lived experience of the American people. There is net zero job growth for native-born Americans of every ethnicity, race, and religion. Zero job growth since, I think, 2019. The millions of jobs under Biden have all gone to foreign-born workers. If you look at the employers, because people work in multiple jobs. People, the working class, as Scott Bessent has demonstrably shown, the top 15% have never made out better in history of the country. And the top 1% is the greatest times they've ever had. Biden's whole budget, this whole budget that has, remember, he just put a budget that has a $1.8 trillion deficit, again, which is going to be higher, but that's incumbent upon raising taxes on billionaires. Not going to happen. Biden, and I just look at performance. Look at Trump's performance. Look at Biden's performance. Biden tried that last January in 2023. Remember, he's going to put a big tax on billionaires. It stayed about 2 weeks and then just went away. The Democrats are never going to tax billionaires because it is progressive billionaires that fund the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is a party of the credentialed managerial class, the credentialed academic class, right, and the cultural elites. On top of that is the financial elites, the sociopathic financial overlords in big tech that essentially run this country between those two with their apparatchiks. That's the credential class. And then you have a free fall, no middle class, no working class. You have a free fall down to the underclass. And that's why they want to continue to get illegal alien invaders into the country and get them into congressional districts and have those congressional districts be reweighted. I think somebody did the analysis the other day. There's something like 12 or 13 congressional seats on just the illegal alien invasion he's allowed in the first 3 years of his watch. So it's obvious their new line of attack is, oh, Trump's authoritarian. Go back to those 3 years. If that's what an illiberal authoritarian does in their actions, in the performance he delivered in 2019 with that economy. Everybody remembers, no inflation, low interest rates, working class people with big, I think 11% real wage in growth, non-college graduates over college graduates, everything clicking on all cylinders before hit by the Chinese bioweapon that we now know is a Chinese bioweapon out of the Wuhan lab, but we said from the very beginning. That those actions and to make sure there was peace, no Putin invasions, no Xi intrusions or blockades into Taiwan, no saber rattling, North Korea, meeting with North Korea, shaking the guy's hand, as bad a guy as that is, the mullahs backed off in Tehran, no invasion of the southern border. What's not to like? He put out a couple of mean tweets, but their meltdown is continuous day in and day out. And they never mention anything, obviously, about the FBI, the Gestapo, everything big tech's done, all of it. But they're trying to sell this. They're trying to sell this narrative. People are not buying. NBC News and the New York Times have huge reports last week on Asian Americans rapidly shifting, not just the Republican Party, but to MAGA. In New York City, like California, everywhere, I think they've gone from 18% support or 18 to 20% report. Now it's the 30, 32% report, could get to a third, could get 50% in this election. A big part of that is the anti-CCP message, of which we're proud to be at the tip of the spear of that. Remember, I'm the first and I think only civilian in the history of this country ever to be sanctioned fully by the Chinese Communist Party, of which it happened in the first 2 minutes of Biden's watch, as you guys know. And Biden's State Department never said anything about that. Others, Peter Navarro was also sanctioned. He was just leaving the White House. I think Mike Pompeo and some others. Matt Pottinger, I think, was another. All government employees at the time or had just left the White House. Didn't hear Biden having a peep on that. Nothing. Okay. Short commercial break. We had a lot to get to. Her is testifying right now. Robert Herr, we're going to get to, we're going to cut into that. John Solomon's here on J6 committee. Blockbuster Raheem's here going through the testimony already of the witness of Biden. All of it next in the world.
As we head toward a presidential election in November, one thing you can be sure of, 2024 will be a tumultuous year like no other. How will your hard-earned savings fare during this year? You're already seeing the impacts of inflation at the pump, the grocery store. The dollar continues to lose buying power quicker than your wages can increase. How are you protecting your savings? Consider diversifying with gold from Birch Gold Group. For decades, gold has been the choice of investors and central banks to hedge against inflation. Now you can own it in a tax-sheltered IRA with the help of Birch Gold. Just text Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, to 989898, and Birch Gold will send you a free info kit on gold. They'll help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into an IRA in gold. And the best part, you don't have to pay a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating, with the Better Business Bureau, thousands of satisfied customers, you can trust Birch Gold. Text Bannon to 989898 to claim your free info kit. That's Bannon to 989898. And secure your savings now. Take action. Text Bannon at 989898. Action, action, action.
Your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Okay, the former head of the largest Christian movement in the country, the Christian Coalition, and now head of Faith and Freedom Coalition, which is the biggest in the country today. Ralph Reed joins us. Ralph, a couple things. Number one, the lead story in Politico on a Monday morning kind of sets the tone for the week. The story yesterday, you've raised $62 million to totally focus on your task and purpose is to get out the vote in a way, in a massive way, particularly maybe even with unregistered people that are Christians are not registered to vote, evangelicals, to have a massive turnout in the election this year in 2024. There was a complete total meltdown from The Guardian to Morning Meet, everywhere, MSNBC, on your efforts. Give us some details on this, because it was a quite amazing story. Oh, yeah, it's an amazing story.
Well, first of all, Steve, I'd love to say we've raised it all now, but for any of your viewers who are supporters of ours, we haven't raised it all yet, so keep helping us. But we're going to get there. And the reason why, Steve, is because these Bible-believing, self-identified born-again evangelicals who make up roughly, you know, it depends on the election, but let's call it 26 to 28% of the electorate, then you add in the 11% of the electorate that is frequently mass attending, faithful, you know, sort of John Paul II Catholics. It's the largest single constituency in the electorate by a magnitude. It's 60% of the entire Republican vote. And our strategy is twofold. Number one, we want to change the numerator. And when we change the numerator, we're going to change the denominator. What do I mean by that? I mean that we're going to go into key states. We're going to have church liaisons in roughly 500 to 1,000 evangelical churches, and they're going to be registering the unregistered. We estimate there are about 9 million of those in the key states, and we've got state-by-state goals. We're confident we're going to achieve those. Those are going to be easier, Steve, in places where you've had a fair amount of in-migration. It's clearly going to be easier in the Sun Belt than it is in, say, the Midwest, but we're going to get it done. The second thing that we're going to do is we're going to dramatically increase turnout. We're going to knock on 10 million doors. We'll reach 18 million evangelical and Catholic voters in their homes. That's the largest such effort outside the RNC on the center right in your or my lifetimes. And when we do those two things, we think we're going to increase the number of evangelical and faithful Catholic voters who go to the polls in November of this year by roughly 8 million over the 2020 baseline. And we project, I'm not in the prediction business, but we think it's a reasonable projection. Trump got 84% of that vote in 2024. we think that number is going to hit 85-86%. It's going to be a total game changer.
I want to just go back to the first set of numbers first. I want people to understand the scale of this. So let's go back to the basic number of the evangelicals and traditional Catholics. What we're talking about is critical mass here.
Yeah, the critical mass on the high side would be 39% of the entire electorate. And again, if past is prologue, and there's no way to know what we're going to be looking at in the fall of this year, that's an eternity in politics. But I think a lot of this is kind of locked in, particularly with Biden's failed policies on the economy, on the border, the foreign wars, the radical abortion agenda, codifying Roe into federal law, taxpayer-funded abortion. These are very radical and extreme policies. So if he gets what I project he's going to get, which is two-thirds of those Catholics, and let's call it 85% of the evangelicals, it's going to be well north of 60% of all the votes that he receives.
And your two things is, number one, sign up all those that are not signed up, register them to vote, and then have a massive turnout campaign. So you turn them all out and all the existing evangelicals and traditional Catholics. So you have a massive turnout. And you think that nets, what do you say, another additional 8 million votes? Is that the number
we think 8 million additional votes over the 2020 baseline. Here's the other thing that the media really didn't report, even though we shared it with them, because it doesn't fit their narrative. 20% of all those voter contacts, 20% of the households we visit, Steve, will be minorities, overwhelmingly Hispanics, but also Asians and African Americans. And that's going to be a game changer.
You just went to my – so in the opening – New York Times and NBC News has done this thing about a massive shift of Asian Americans, right? Massive shift from like 18 to 20%, maybe to 30, 32%. And now linked to Drudge is a story about African-Americans and Hispanics look like going to vote in historic levels. But none of them mention the religious component of this.
Right.
What's driving that is a big religious component, is it not, sir?
That's right, Steve. The path to the African-American vote has always been through the Black church and through the Black faith community. You know, just a couple of data points on the Hispanics. Roughly 40% of Hispanics self-identify as conservatives. Roughly 25% of Hispanics self-identify as born-again evangelicals. Probably an equal number would be considered faithful traditionalist Roman Catholics. And, you know, we think this community is shifting. And I tell you, one of the great untold stories in American politics in the last 5-6 years, Steve, has been the advances on the right and in the Republican Party on data analytics on the Hispanic vote. I mean, when we first started 15 years ago, you know, we would go to Data Trust, which was the main repository for the Republican Party, and ask them for modeled faith-based Hispanic voters. Couldn't even get a file. Not even in Florida. Not even in Texas. That's changing, Steve. And I think, here's the irony. I really believe this. I think the things that they have been saying for 30 years, which was the changing demographics of the country signaled our denouement, it's the exact opposite. Those voters are coming our way. They feel like they've been had, and they're right. They feel like they've been played, and they're right. And they've gotten nothing from this administration, and they're ready to move.
And the way to do that is contact. This is what Obama showed us in 08. The way to do that is personal contact. It's not going to be TV ads. It's personal. It's not going to be mailers. It's personal contact. That does. I want to also add the
and
most
Steve,
robust
repeat,
church in the world, 100 million.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. Continue to go. The 100 million practicing evangelical Christians and Catholics in the underground church in China. Right. So the many of the seats of the people here post CCP here, one of the big drivers is anti-CCP Chinese are here that hate them, the CCP, and principally because they're atheistic communists. I got to ask you, with all this going on, and you look at that, you're like a field commander in the Christian Nationalist Army of God? Is that would that handle fit you appropriately?
No, I wouldn't really subscribe to that term. No, we're just a public policy organization. Steve, I know it.
Are you a Christian nationalist?
Number one, I don't know what that is, and number two, the answer I think would be no. I'll tell you what I am. I'm the son of a Navy veteran, career Navy Reserve officer. I'm the son-in-law of a career active duty Army officer. I'm a patriot. I love my country, and I also love God. I'm not looking for a political messiah. I'm not trying to impose my faith on the country through political means. But I tell you what I am attempting to do, and I think it's good for the whole country. I think what I am attempting to do is to see the values that are reflected in the Bible, reflected in the public policy of our country. And that is not necessarily, by the way, necessarily a right-wing or a left-wing agenda. We worked on criminal justice reform with the Trump administration and took positions on that issue that were a little different than traditional conservatives. Same on immigration. We're certainly for a secure border, but we also think that you ought to strengthen the family and provide greater means of legal immigration for spouses and minor children. That's a topic for another time. And when it comes to the sanctity of life, we believe that every human being is made in God's image and that they're deserving of protection of their life. And we think that these are transcendent values, and we're seeking to bring those values and those beliefs into the public policy arena. And then the other thing we're working on doing is making sure that Christians are effective citizens, that means being registered to vote, voting, being informed, and influencing legislation. I thought that was, honestly, Steve, I thought that was the greatness of America. I thought that was civics 101. I didn't know there was anything controversial about it.
Ralph, can we hold you for a few minutes through the break? Because I got a couple of questions on Israel. You electrified this audience with your live reports from there. Do you have a couple of minutes you just stay through this break?
Yeah, maybe a couple.
Okay. We're going to take a short commercial break here. Return with Ralph Reed, one of the most prominent members of the Christian community in our country, the head of Faith and Freedom Coalition, formerly head of the Christian Coalition, has a program, and we're going to put up the site you can go to. They're still raising the money, but it intends to put $62 million into voter registration and get out the vote. He says it's going to net generate, potentially, if they hit their projections, 8 million additional votes for President Trump. In 2024. Short commercial break. We're going to talk to him about the red lines in Gaza, the red lines with Hamas, next in the War Room. Who can you trust? Government leaders repeatedly fail us. Self-appointed experts have led us astray. Distrust in so-called authorities is spreading like a bad cold. We can't quite shake it, but you are not as powerless as they'd like you to believe. When there's no one to depend on, it's time to rely and depend on yourself. Not sure where to start? Well, try this. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. Grab a 4-week emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply for just $60 off. Think about that. $60 off right now. My Patriot Supply has helped millions of American families reach self-reliance. I want you to think about that. Reach self-reliance. These food kits offer meals, drinks, and snacks that provide over 2,000 calories every single day, sealed inside heavy-duty packaging that lasts up to 25 years in storage. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and protect your future with as many kits as you need. These kits ship fast, free, and arrive in unmarked boxes. With My Patriot Supply, when you order by 3 p.m., your food kits will ship the same day. Save $60 per kit. That is $60 per kit at MyPatriotSupply.com. Take action. Use your agency. action, action, action.
Would have been very different were it not for this country. No matter the role, no matter the administration, I have applied the same standards and the same impartiality. My respect for the Justice Department and my commitment to this country are why I agreed to serve as special counsel when asked by the Attorney General. I resolved to do the work really as I did all my work for the department.
Robert Herr is teeing it up. I want to get John Solomon and we'll go back to her. John, you're following closely this J6 fiasco and the suppression of evidence. How big a deal is this first off, with the facts that we now know are accurate, and then with the J6 committee suppressing this information, sir?
Yeah, listen, it is Russia collusion perfected, right? In 2015-16, it was the FBI misleading a court. By the time you get to 2023 and 2022, it's a Democrat Congress misleading the entire American public. They're literally saying a third-hand account by Cassidy Hutchinson, who did not witness anything in the presidential limo, is more credible than the driver of the limo, who was an eyewitness, who said nothing happened in the car like Hutchinson testified. They hid the driver's testimony. They hid all of the evidence that showed that President Trump, just like I reported, because I had Capitol Police documents, offered 10,000 troops 3 days before January 6th to Washington, D.C. and the Capitol Police. They literally concocted a false story. And the way they did it was to affirm testimony they knew was wrong and to hide, destroy, or transfer testimony that contradicted with their theories to it. We've seen this time and again, and I've said many times on your show, because no one got punished for Russia, the temptation to keep using Democrat-fueled, taxpayer-funded false stories is going to be great until someone pays a penalty. No one's paying a penalty, so the January 6th committee went ahead and misled the American people with millions of dollars of taxpayer money at their behest.
But you and I talked about this at the time, and you reported it. The original sin here, how this happened, is that it's not a regular official committee like it's been set up for Watergate, for Iran-Contra. They didn't have a ranking member, and they didn't have a minority counsel. In other words, you couldn't see the evidence, and you couldn't cross-examine the witnesses. They were able to concoct anything they wanted to concoct. This is, by the way, she perjured herself. More importantly, Nancy Pelosi and the chief counsel of the thing, they all are in on this. This is why the Republicans now, Loudermilk's thing's fantastic. But do you agree with me? They got to go next level on this. There should be criminal referrals put on for perjury. Yeah. And I think go after Pelosi, the general counsel of the thing, also Kinzinger and Cheney. All of them are in on this to destroy Donald Trump and the MAGA movement, sir.
Think of the family legacy that the Cheney family will have one day. Dad misled the country on WMD. Daughter misled the country on January 6th. And they did it through voodoo investigation, creating the illusion while hiding the facts. And you're right. Congress, just like the courts and every other system, rests on a competitive environment. Both sides have to be able to tell their stories for the American people to get the truth. And in this case, the Democrats wired this system so that no truth from the Trump side, no exculpatory information would be found, and they could craft whatever fictional movie they wanted, and they did, and it was a movie. They used video. They used Hollywood producers. The only thing they didn't use were truth and facts. And now we're getting those because a guy named Barry Loudermilk stubborn enough to keep digging in and poking them until we get the truth. But the White House was in on this. The Homeland Security Department was in on this. This was a large conspiracy. And I think it goes back to no punishment for the Russia collusion guys, no punishment for the laptop guys. There's no disincentive for the Democrats not to lie to the American people. And that's why a criminal referral or referrals, plural, could be a very important tool. If someone gets prosecuted finally for misleading the American public, the incentive to cheat is going to be less in the future. But right now, Dems are doing it with impunity.
What are you recommending to Jordan? I know you're close to Jordan and Comer and Johnson. What are you recommending to these guys?
Listen, I think the most important thing they have to do now, they've gotten a lot of facts. They have turned the battleship of facts around. But telling the story has been complicated. You got Ukrainian names, Russian names, you got all these. It's a very simple story. Joe Biden lied to get into the White House. His son ran the most extraordinary influence peddling operation we've ever seen in American history. So much so, I don't know if you saw the story last week, but his dad, Joe Biden, as vice president, oversees an indictment of a Ukrainian oligarch named Dmitry Firtash. And a few months later, Hunter's on the other side of the transaction telling Dmitry Firtash, I can make my dad's indictment of you go away if you pay me $5 million. And the guy transfers money and the scam is on. That's how bold-faced that the influence peddling is. And then the last part of it is they have used every ounce of government since they got in power to prosecute or to persecute Donald Trump and conservatives who support him and to demonize MAGA. And they've often done it with false evidence. I think the story that's going to happen in the next few months that Jim Jordan and James Comer and Barry Loudermilk are going to get, they're going to show how much the Biden White House was involved in the planning of these prosecutions in Georgia and in Washington and in Florida. That is the Holy Grail. We already know from my reporting that the White House told the National Archives to sic the FBI and Trump on classified documents. I sued last week in Georgia with America First Legal because we know there are documents showing White House contacts with the Georgia prosecutor. The White House doesn't belong in any criminal prosecution. And we now know they were in two. Crack that wide open. You have Watergate for the 21st century.
Make us smart on, we're going to cut to her right now, his testimony. Make us smart on her. What should the audience be looking for in her testimony today?
You're going to hear what an independent prosecutor saw as Biden's state of mind. And it's a confused state of mind. The man can't keep facts together, can't remember things. Maybe it's for convenience. Maybe it's because he does have some form of dementia. But we have a president who couldn't even perform in a basic function of an interview with a prosecutor. And that state of mind also goes to state of policy. And I think this moment today will tie together two different things. Joe Biden's policies with Joe Biden's dementia or his aging or whatever it is we want to call it. It is a scary factor that the man with his finger on the nuclear trigger has these many issues before him. And I think one thing that I'll point everyone in the audience to listen to, wait till they get the question about why did Joe Biden have two Ukraine documents from his contacts with the prime minister the month, the very month that he fired the prosecutor or forced the firing of the prosecutor investigating Burisma and Hunter Biden. He kept two souvenir documents from those period when he was trying to force the firing. That is a very important tell. We're going to see what Robert Hur tells the American public about that today.
John, where do people go to get all your content?
Jay Solomon reports on all social media and justthenews.com. And of course, I'm lucky enough to follow you on this great network. 6 o'clock on Real America's Voice. Just the news, no noise, with my colleague, Amanda Head.
Thanks, John. Thanks for the great scoops.
Thanks, Steve.
Let's go to Robert Hur live in the questioning.
That is in the report, yes.
And these are national security documents. Afghanistan, I mean, has been mentioned a whole bunch of those things, right?
Correct.
And at one point in time, his personal attorneys and the DOJ attorneys argued about notes, taking all of the different things and compared it to Reagan.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, Congressman?
President Biden's attorneys, personal attorneys, talked about the notes and why they didn't actually account for the Presidential Records Act. But you found that argument in your report. It seems a little persuasive, but you eventually said, no, the executive order trumps, right?
We did set forth an analysis of the governing law and ultimately concluded that the executive order 13526 does apply and did govern former Vice President Biden at the time.
So you have audio recording from his ghostwriter where the president acknowledges that the information he has is classified and he's sharing with his ghostwriter.
We have an audio recording capturing a statement from Mr. Biden saying to his ghostwriter in February of 2017, quote, I just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote.
And then again, reciting passages from a meeting in the Situation Room.
Yes.
And those are in President Biden's own words.
Correct.
Right. So and the ghostwriter has no classified, no classified clearance to anything, correct?
That is our understanding that Mr. Zwanitzer was not authorized to receive classified information.
Okay, so the elements are possessed documents, the documents related to national defense, and willfully retained those documents, and in this case, shared them with somebody who was not allowed to receive them.
There are different subsections of 18 U.S.C. 793. One subsection relates to the willful retention, and another relates to disclosure of national defense information.
Well, I mean, the willful retention, we've got the Penn Biden Center, the garage, the basement den, the main floor office, the third floor den, the University of Delaware, and the Biden Institute. We have a 50-year career of a person who has not been very great at dealing with classified documents throughout, even prior to his time as vice president, when he was in the U.S. Senate, right?
We do address each set of those documents in the report, Congressman.
So the difference, but I think this is really important because the difference is it appears just from reading the report, he has, and we heard all about exonerated and all of those different things. It appears from the report he met every actual element of the crime. So I want to talk about the department principles on federal prosecution, because that actually has nothing to do with the underlying elements, correct? It's whether or not you can prove this at trial.
Under the department's justice manual and the principles of federal prosecution, a prosecutor has to assess the evidence and determine whether, in his or her judgment, the probable outcome will be a conviction at trial.
So whether or not you meet the elements of the crime, which I think it's clear that he does, the second part of this is this, and that's where it gets into the sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. You could have just said we don't prosecute sitting presidents, but you did not. And you enter this, but that doesn't have anything to do with the actual elements of the crime. That has to do with getting a conviction at trial, correct?
Well, Congressman, part and parcel of a prosecutor's judgment as to whether or not a conviction is the probable outcome of trial is assessing how the evidence identified during the investigation lines up with the elements and what proof can be offered to a jury during a trial.
Sure, but his well-meaning elderly old man has nothing to do with the underlying elements of the crime.
Well, it certainly has
something. It's a presentation to the jury.
It certainly has something.
Back. Gentleman can respond.
It certainly has something to do with the way that a jury is going to perceive and receive and consider and make conclusions based on evidence at trial, Congressman.
Time the gentleman has expired. The chair now recognizes the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, Mr. Nadler.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hur, in your written testimony, you say that you found some evidence that the president might have willfully retained classified materials at the end of his vice presidency, correct?
Correct.
But ultimately, you concluded that you could not prove the charge in a court of law. In your words, you, quote, did not identify evidence that rose to the level of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, close quote, correct?
That was my judgment.
You have been a prosecutor for a long time, Mr. Hur. Would you agree that there is no such thing as being a little bit charged for a crime? You're either charged or you're not, correct?
Could you please repeat the question, Congressman?
Would you agree that there's no such thing as being a little bit charged for a crime? You're either charged or you are not charged, correct?
Yes, it is binary. Either one is not charged or charged.
So just to be clear, because so many people have taken your words out of context, your ultimate conclusion was that President Biden could not be charged with a crime because even after your thorough investigation, you could not find sufficient evidence to charge him, correct?
My conclusion was that based on my evaluation of the evidence as a prosecutor.
Don't feel buzzed, correct?
I'm sorry, Congressman, I didn't hear your last question.
I said, based on your conclusion, your ultimate conclusion is that President Biden could not be charged with a crime because even after your thorough investigation, you could not find sufficient evidence to charge him. Correct or not correct?
My ultimate conclusion was that criminal charges were not warranted.
Correct. Now, let's talk about why. I have limited time, so please, when I say correct or not correct, answer the question. Now, let's talk about why, in sharp contrast to President Biden, President Trump faces 40 charges related to the unlawful retention of highly classified documents. That is, of course, apart from the additional 51 counts in cases alleging that he incited a rebellion and lied about his finances. You found that President Biden reported the possible classified documents in his possession to the FBI as soon as he learned of them, correct?
There was a voluntary disclosure by the president's counsel to authorities relating to the discovery of classified documents at the Penn Biden.
Let's contrast this with President Trump. Are you aware that the FBI only learned that Trump was in possession of classified material after the National Archives discovered them?
Congressman, I am not intimately familiar with the facts relating to former President Trump. I'm prepared to comment on them to the extent that I address them
okay.
in the report.
You write in your report that President Biden, quote, would not have handed the government classified documents from his own home on a silver platter if he had willfully retained those documents for years, close quote. In other words, part of understanding President Biden's intent was that he quickly and voluntarily returned those documents to the government, correct?
That was a factor in our analysis, yes.
Thank you. By way of contrast, to the best of your knowledge, why did the Department of Justice seek a warrant to search Mar-a-Lago?
Congressman, I am not familiar with those deliberations. That is a matter that I had no participation
well,
in.
Well, I'll tell you, it was because they were concerned that Trump had lied about possession of those documents and might conceal or destroy them. Special Counsel Smith found that President Trump obstructed his investigation by suggesting that his attorney falsely represent to the FBI and grand jury that Trump did not have the documents called for by the grand jury subpoena. At any point in your investigation, Did you have any reason to believe that President Biden lied to you?
I can only take so much of Jerry Nadler. When I say it's correct, I want you to answer. We're going to go back. We're going to dip in and out of this. And maybe Grace and Mo can put it up on one of our alternative channels so that those of you that want to watch the whole thing can watch it. We'll come in and out of it.
For War Room veterans, you know we have been all over this supply chain issue with China and medications and the active pharmaceutical ingredients. China has a stranglehold on us where there's a way to break that. Jace Medical. I got an emergency medication kit from them. The FDA just declared a global shortage of medication and warned that critical antibiotics are in extreme short supply across the United States. But you know that because you're a viewer or listener of the show. Now, here's the action you can take to correct. Do yourself and your family a favor and get your Jace case right now. It's a pack of five prescription antibiotics you'll have on hand for common emergencies. Just visit jacemedical.com. That's Jace, J-A-S-E. JaceMedical.com. Take a few minutes and fill out the form. Your information will be reviewed by a board-certified physician, and your medication will be dispensed by a licensed pharmacy at a fraction of the regular cost. You'll be glad you have the Jace case. Go to Jace Medical. That's one word, J-A-S-E, medical.com, and enter code Bannon at checkout for a discount on your order. That's promo code Bannon at Jace, J-A-S-E, medical.com. You know what the problem is because you've watched the show. You can take action and break that problem by going to Jace Medical and get your Jace case today. Action, action, action.
Raheem, and by the way, National Pulse, you've done an analysis already. You've gotten the actual transcript of the deposition of Biden. It's up on National Pulse. You're breaking it down. What are we going to see today on this?
Got it all here, Steve, going through it line by line. Got my highlighter out. Reminds me of the early War Room impeachment days, going through all the transcripts and finding out where the lies were. Got the second part of the transcripts over here, and we've already got several stories up at thenationalpulse.com. For people to get to grips with here. There are certain things that just jump out off these pages at you, ladies and gentlemen, and don't necessarily just take my word for it, right? These are the sorts of things that if you have the time, you really should get into. Don't let the Fox News anchors and the Raheem Kassams even of the world, you know, dictate to you your interpretation of these things. It's a fascinating part of history that we're seeing, and it's fascinating for several reasons. Number one is the big picture, big ticket item that we led with this morning, right? And you'll remember when this came out, I remember I was in Las Vegas waiting for that Nevada primary. And Biden goes up on stage and he says, how dare the special counsel bring up my son? And of course, I remember when he died. Well, these transcripts are pretty unequivocal. It was Joe Biden who first raised Beau Biden 7 minutes into the first interview, by the way, and indeed could not remember, had to be told by White House counsel what year he died in. He originally was talking 2017, 2018. White House counsel was like, it was 2015, actually, May the 30th, to which Joe Biden responded, is that right? Was that the date? The second part of it comes down to he couldn't remember when he was vice president. He even queried if he was vice president 4 months into his vice presidential tenure. So he's brought information that says, you know, in 2009, this, that, and the other. He says, was I still vice president back then? Same thing happens later on in the transcript as well. He's told about something that happened in 2015. He says, was I still vice president back then? He has to be told by White House counsel, yes, you were still vice president until January 2017. So that's the first big ticket item, is that when Joe Biden went up there and he gave his angry rebuttal to the Hur report originally, he was very, very clearly lying about the investigation here. The second part, which we have just put up at thenationalpulse.com, I wonder if we can even get it up on screen for people here, is that very early on, page 8 of the transcript, he talks about the, quote, real advantage that he was getting from working with the Penn Biden Center. And that real advantage, in his words, is cash money. He says, I'm going to try and read it verbatim for you here, in amongst all of the mess that I have of these transcripts, Steve, this morning. You know what I'm like with this. Quote from Joe Biden, and the real advantage I had in the Penn job was they gave me money to hire staff. So I was able to hire some first-rate people like the Secretary of State now. He's talking about Antony Blinken. Quote, he's my Secretary of State. He was working for me at the Penn Center, at the Penn Biden Center. Why is that important? Well, there were something like 63 donations, many of them anonymous, from Chinese individuals to that center between the years of 2015 and 2019. We're still not entirely sure what so many Chinese individuals were doing, giving money to the Penn Biden Center, but I think you can probably figure it out. I think you can probably read between the lines. The critical part of that is contextualization, of course. At that point in the transcripts, they're talking about foreign policy and foreign policy making. So that's just a couple of the things we're finding already. I mean, we're only about a third of the way into the first transcript. Probably got another 100 pages to go on this stuff, Steve. But there's a lot. I mean, I had the staff put together how many times Joe Biden has said, I don't remember, I don't recall, I don't know, I'm not sure, it doesn't occur to me. We're talking close to 100 times in total over the course of 2 hours, 2.5 hours worth of interview, that Biden just goes, I don't know, I don't remember, I don't recall. So, you know, I'm happy to take Robert Hur at his word. This is a man who does not have a fully functioning memory of what was going on at the time.
Raheem, I tell you what, we're going to let you bounce back into that and keep going through it. I'm going to bring you back in a little while because there's another topic I want to talk to you about your this thing about the Democratic Party not certifying President Trump, because even more information has come out about this. We'll get you in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll let you go back to breaking this down.
Okay, thenationalpulse.com/war room.
Got to get it. National Pulse got all the best analysis out there. Birchgold.com. Biden, $7.3 trillion budget for 2025, $7.3 trillion. They project, their projection, a $1.8 trillion deficit, a $1.8 trillion deficit. Now, you know it's going to be, and that includes very rosy tax outlook, which they missed badly this current year. So, and last year also. So you know that this deficit is going to be, I think, 2.5. He may actually get to a $3 trillion deficit. This is just pure insanity. That's why more than ever you need to go to Birch Gold. Go to birchgold.com/Bannon to get the end of the dollar empire. But more importantly, get Philip Patrick and the team on top of this. Get them on this. Make sure you ask them, why is gold a hedge? Why is gold near an all-time high? What is happening? What are the converging forces? We give you the macro on the show every day. Make sure you talk about the specifics, the micro, about pricing and all of that valuation with Philip Patrick. That's birchgold.com/Bannon. Get Philip Patrick and the team up there. Let's go back. Let's go back to her. This is going to be pretty explosive throughout the day. Let's go ahead and hear it.
Tool of despotism. And I am desperately afraid that this decision of the Department of Justice is now crossed a very bright line, and I yield back.
Gentleman yields back.
Chairman, I ask for unanimous consent to introduce the State of the Union as an exhibit into the hearing.
Without objection, that'll be introduced. The ranking member is recognized for unanimous consent.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I ask unanimous consent that a copy of an article in this morning's Washington Post entitled "Full Transcript of Biden's Special Counsel Interview Paints Nuanced Portrait," The president doesn't come across as absent-minded as her has made him out to be.
Without objection.
Thank you.
The chair recognizes, now recognizes the gentlelady from California for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Hur, for being here today. I found your report very interesting, and I learned some things about it. The law and the precedents, there are clear differences between the cases.
We're going to cut back in the top of the hour. Raheem's going through the actual deposition of Joe Biden. And like he says, he's going to put analysis up there. Make sure that's also going to link to it. So for the War Room posse, it likes the receipts. You're going to get plenty of that today. Plenty of that. In the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to get Raheem back up. TikTok is going to be voted. First of all, 1 o'clock today, a secure briefing by FBI, DOJ, CIA, DNI to the House members. Vote is going to be tomorrow. There is intense lobbying, and part of that is the moneyed interest and the lobbyists doing it. But another part, they've really allowed, you know, these young kids to swamp the switchboard even more than the War Room Posse does than when we're up and on it on some action. And it's just inundated with young people, don't even know much about Congress, but it's working against them because it shows you kind of the Red Guard mentality that this device can do. Remember, TikTok is by far the most dangerous of all the information warfare weapons that, and it is a weapon that the Chinese Communist Party has put out there. So that vote's going to be tomorrow. We're going to talk more about TikTok in the second hour, also about Taylor Swift and the possibilities, what the possibilities that are out there from her schedule. Because I think as we've gone through her schedule and you think about what's happening with TikTok, I don't think it's a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences. So we're going to take a short commercial break here at the top hour and come back. It's a lot going on today. You've got a this huge TikTok battle. President Trump now talking about the budget of Joe Biden and where he differs in that. They're lying about President Trump wanting to cut Social Security or Medicare. Nothing could be farther from the truth. But they are desperate in their attempts to attack him. Short commercial break, 11 o'clock hour. We're going to go back to the hearing. More news and analysis. Stick around. The apples in your holiday pie taste amazing, but it's not exactly the recommended 5 servings of fruits and vegetables. The Mayo Clinic says if you want to help prevent heart disease, lower blood pressure, and your cholesterol, eat 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day, which, as you know, is almost impossible. That's why you need to check out Field of Greens. Every fruit and vegetable in Field of Greens was medically selected by doctors to support your vital organs, like your heart, your lungs, your kidneys, and your immune system. Yo, folks, the holidays are here, and you need to stay healthy. Plus, you'll notice your skin, hair, and nails will look healthier. Field of Greens is the simplest way to get those daily fruits and veggies, and it tastes amazing. Let me get you started with 15% off your first order. Visit fieldofgreens.com. Use promo code Bannon. That's promo code Bannon at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Make sure you take it today. Use your agency. Action, action, action. Fieldofgreens.com. Promo code Bannon.com. All one word, warroomhealth.com. Use the code WARROOM at checkout to save 67% of your first shipment. That's code WARROOM at checkout to save 67%. And do it again. Warroom Health, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Go there today. You need, if you're going to be part of the posse, you need a strong heart. You need a lion's heart. How we're going to do that is with Salty. Go there. Do it today. Check it out.